amount of work that she does in order to coordinate this and make it look like it's nothing, you know. Y'all just bring your stuff, you know, and then she does. But she does. She's very proactive and really taking care. And this is something that we can do. His Holiness the Dalai Lama talks about service. Particularly Christians have from his perspective, have a much better handle on service. They do more service than Buddhist community. So it's excellent to participate however you can. When I was here, the last time I taught, I had the opportunity, it was a happening thing when I was here, so I had the opportunity to go to Friendship Park and help pass out food, watching all the homeless people come, you know, going to the place, first of all, and seeing, heavens to Betsy, so many homeless people. Unbelievable. And so I'm so grateful to be able to give, you know, such a small thing. Such a small thing to do. And yet a huge thing. Because it's, you know, other than giving that, then we just don't pay any attention to our practice of generosity, right? So much. This is a really active one. You can do that. And there are other things that you can do. If you get on the email list with Dasha, she tells you what other things they could use. Blankets and purses, satchels, things they can carry their belongings in. It's the problem of homelessness is huge. We are not taking care of our people. And it's really heartbreaking. So, if you can participate in any way, please do. Because it's good for you. It's good for them. It's good for Diamond Light as an organization to be holding this. And it's just really excellent. Excellent to do. And the nonviolent communication, to learn how to speak in a nonviolent way, when you take a course in nonviolent communication, you really do see how it is that we blame the other person. It's because you did that, then I feel bad. Because you said like that, then I'm mad. You made me mad. So it's the whole nonviolent communication, the methodology. We don't really cultivate a vocabulary of nonviolent communication. We don't cultivate being able to speak about feelings and needs. We cultivate the words that are more blaming, you know, that is always putting it out there. It's, you did that. If you would behave in a different way, then I would be happy. So being able to express your displeasure in a nonviolent way, because we do have to express ourselves. Not always, but in order to be able to express hard things, to talk about hard things, then being able to learn how to do that. Do you do play acting? I mean, do you do...
Dialogues?
Dialogues?
No, we haven't done that.
Oh, that'll be fun. You better do that.
Watch out, she'll take over the class.
I wish you could hear your teaching on this. It sounds
so
rich.
No.
I just have a little bit of vocabulary of it, which I do. I do my little piece. NBC is so big.
NBC is very big.
And so I just do the little piece I know that I can share.
Yes, honestly. Good. It will be perfect. Yeah. It will be absolutely perfect. And then people want to know more. They can go do more. But it's we start somewhere, don't we? Yeah, it's really. I took a class with Marshall Rosenberg many years ago, and it was fascinating. And he really put you on the spot, you know, right there. Because he's very entertaining. He plays the guitar, and he's got puppets. And, So he's very entertaining.
Well, we've just had a whole education on the opposite of nonviolent education or
communication.
Communication. Through the whole voting season.
Oh, I see. I see. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we're not going there.
No. But it's hard because it's so permeated our culture right now. It's so hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
You know, and just, I wish I could be here for your Monday night class. Unfortunately, I have a conflict. It's either that or my Tai Chi class, which I've been looking for years. So, if you give it again on another night, I'll be.
Good, good. Yeah, yeah, it is. It's useful. It's useful. We just have to keep our hearts open and as much as possible be kind. So, actually, I'm going to go back because the question here is why should we be focusing on suffering, the suffering of samsara?
So we wake up to reality and truth.
Right.
Of illusion and ignorance, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And also, yeah, that's exactly right. And also, the fact that when we take refuge in Buddha Dharma, we are acknowledging our profound potential. We are acknowledging that we can do something about this. That we actually can liberate ourselves from this. That we don't have to be suffering on and on and on ad nauseum, right? We can activate, Lama used to call it, activate your nuclear wisdom. So we activate our wisdom to emerge from this suffering environment. And so that, you know, actually refuge is the doorway. It is the path to enlightenment. It's on the path. It opens the door. You know, that's where we head. So when Lord Buddha when he reached enlightenment and sat there with it for 6 weeks, he went to his friends that he had been studying with for, I think, was it 6 years? 5 or 6 years? Doing ascetic practices, really ascetic practices. And he, this was the teaching that he gave to them. It's called the Four Noble Truths or the Four Arya Truths, because when one sees reality as it is, this is what you get. This is what you know. You know that there is suffering. When he was still a prince and he was looking upon a field, this was when he was beginning to question reality. He was beginning to question this princely kingdom. He was beginning to question when he went out and he saw someone who was sick, someone who was old, someone who had died. And he's sitting on the hillside and he's looking out. And he sees a farmer plowing, you know, the farmer really straining, plowing. And the ox, you know, having to do that, pulling. Instead of this beautiful, you know, you might look at this pastoral scene with the birds and the flowers. But he saw the ox, he saw the farmer. He saw that the dirt was being churned up and the worms and bugs were coming up. And the birds were flying in and eating the worms and the bugs and fighting with one another. So what he saw was, this is suffering. And when he came to understand the truth of reality, he told his friends, there is suffering. And we have to know that. We must know that. We delude ourselves and distract ourselves from our suffering. We don't really look at it, as Sunil said. We don't really look. And then suffering has a cause. the causes are to be abandoned. What are the causes? The causes of suffering. What is the cause of suffering?
Bad deeds.
We can say bad deeds. We can say that. And why do we create them?
Ignorance.
Ignorance is a... It's not really a not knowing. Ignorance is active. It's an active misknowing. You know, we think we know, but we've got it wrong. So it's this, it's a dependent arising. Things arise depending upon causes and conditions, and they are empty of any inherent nature. So by putting karma and emptiness together, this understanding, this dependent arising of how things exist, then we can begin our path to freedom by understanding that. So understanding the causes need to be abandoned. So we need to understand how reality does exist. We need the wisdom of emptiness. And we need to understand karma and what actions to adopt and what actions to abandon. I always think about Jiminy Cricket. Do you remember how Pinocchio had Jiminy Cricket and he would, and the little song, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. And that's, I just think about that. Yeah, that's the path. It's accentuating the positive and eliminating the negative. So that what arises in our mind is happiness. So this is it. So suffering can cease, right? The medicine is to be taken. We see the Buddha as the doctor and the Dharma as the medicine and the Sangha as the nurses and practitioners helping on the path. And we take the medicine. We practice. That's what it is. It's just practice. It's turning our mind, changing our mind through practice. And the path out of suffering is that this path is needs to be actualized. You know, we have to practice it. Rilpa Rinpoche was just fabulous.
He's so dear.
Yeah, so absolutely dear. Amazingly dear. He gave an experiential Lam Rim course over the course of a couple of years. Or it was two times he taught, but it wasn't consecutive years at Land of Medicine Buddha. And he said, you know, the Lama can't toss you up to enlightenment like tossing a pebble. So it requires effort. This is the perfection of joyful effort. It does require our effort. And Mingyur Rinpoche, in that little clip that was very entertaining, he said... you know, why don't we practice? Because we're lazy. And he said, so that's okay. You know, make friends with your laziness. And do a little bit. This was primarily, and I've said this many times over and over and over again, a little bit every day is better than being, you know, as he said, you know, you go to a teaching and you come home and you're just like, oh, yes!
I'm going to do this.
Exactly, you know, but you're tight. You're really tight. And your mind is just completely distracted. So there's this balance. We have to find the balance between laziness and this kind of tight. Doesn't work. Tight doesn't work. Relax works. So much better. Also brings joy to your practice when you're relaxed. because our days are so full of distraction and so full of unbelievable busy. So now you give yourself the gift of doing nothing. Tilopa, Master Tilopa said, the king of all activity lies beyond the need to do. One of the a useful thing to do is when you practice and you finish your practice and you dedicate, watch your mind, because as soon as the bell dings, you've got one foot off the cushion. Watch how you've already started to think about what's happening next, and pull yourself back for 30 seconds. And watch how it is that you don't have to be compelled to do. The difference in the mind when you are more subdued, when you don't do, then he says the highest king of all activity stays here doing nothing. This is in a Mahamudra teaching. Which is, one day we'll do that. It's really cool. So we do have to practice, We have to do the work. And on Saturday when we did our day-long retreat, I brought in the ideas of trying to bring yourself to a state of peace when you practice. To really, really do go through the steps to come to a state of relaxation and calm. Not just come into your cushion and sit down and say, okay, we're going to get her done. But really come to invite yourself to a state of peace. And then give yourself an opportunity to cultivate that. There are tricks to be able to do that. You can use your imagination, thinking about a time in your life that was using your imagination, thinking about something that's really uplifting for you. I like to sit on the beach. Can sit and calm my mind by smelling in my imagination the salt air, hearing the seals barking and the seagulls flying. It can take me right back to a time in the late afternoon on the sand when the sun is beginning to come down and all the children they're all tired out. The boom boxes have gone back home and it's a peaceful time. So whatever you have in your life that you can tap into to use it. To bring some joy, some delight, to open your mind, open your heart, and bring yourself to that state of joyful practice. And then, and only then, engage in your setting your motivation, making your prayers. It's useful, I find, to have your Lama in front of you, to have the Buddha in front of you, and after you've said the prayers, to dissolve your teacher into you, and then sit with that, having that mind. Because then, if you think these prayers that we do, where we've requested blessings, and if you think, may I be inspired by Guru devotion, so you think about your Lama, think about what that means. May I be inspired? Yeah, may I, really. So how do you get inspired by your teacher? You think about them, and you think about how great it is that you had the opportunity to meet these amazing lamas that shared their practice. So that kind of opens your heart. That begins to soften your heart. And then when you think, May I be inspired by, uplifted by the preciousness of this human life. You think about that. Shed the fetters of attachment and aversion through a knowledge of impermanence. So you think about that. Yeah, I've got this, and I'm going to lose it. So you go through those prayers, and you can think that the Buddha is actually sending you light, sending you the light of wisdom of each one of those lines, coming right into your heart and granting you that wisdom. And this is a great meditation. You can bring the Buddha to the top of your head and have the wisdom flowing down through the center of your body and coming to your heart. This is very powerful. To sit at the end of each one of those, may I have this, may I be that, and then to sit with that and experience the wisdom coming into you of that just for a moment and think that you have that. That's been given to you. That's a seed planted. And when if that's all you could do is to say those prayers and imagine receiving those blessings, fantastic. So fantastic. And then you stop at the very end and sit in shamatha meditation, in one-pointed meditation, just for a little while. If you do that every day, it will change your life. It will. I guarantee it. So the Buddha taught the three sufferings. The suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and all-pervasive suffering. So we know the suffering of suffering. That's easy, you know. The headache.
Whatever she has.
Whatever she has, we don't want it.
I can't figure out what's going on with her. What is that?
She's really, really sick.
Smells.
She's green. She's probably got a hangover.
What's that red thing around her neck?
That's her body. No? I think that's her body.
Yeah.
And her shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah, that's her body. Oh, anyway, God, she's sick.
She's sick.
Yeah. So, you know, we have... When we're sick...
I can't possibly practice when I'm sick.
I know. Lama said when he was dying, he wrote a letter to his brother. And he said in that letter that really the only thing he could do was practice Tonglen, giving and taking. So I do this. That's what I can do when I'm sick, is to think, okay, that's all I can do. For sure, that's all I can do. It's just, may this be enough. You know, I'll take all the suffering of all of this pain and let it be enough. Relieve all the, breathe out. Give everybody good health. That's a useful practice when you're sick. But we know, I mean, right now, if you think about having good health, we take it for granted, don't we? Until we don't have it. And then we think, oh man, I really am going to die. So it is, we have to think about the suffering of suffering, because we don't think about it. Just like we don't think about death. Death comes to others. It doesn't come to me. When we hear somebody died, we think, oh, so sorry. But does it go, could I be next? You know, I might be next.
Up in the hills with the twisty, windy roads and seeing truck after car after truck and little bugs and big trucks slid off the road, you know.
Sure.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That could be me.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a practice.
It is.
It's like, that could be me.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's very good to say that. that could be me. And then to make some kind of prayer for that person. You know? Then always trying to grow your loving kindness and your compassion to make a prayer for those people. But to remember, when we think about how things are, how death can come at any moment, we're less likely to be grasping, creating that mind of grasping. I gotta have that. But we can't take it with us. So what happens if you don't have that? It's amazing how little you need, really. And how much we think we need. So it's quite useful to think about the suffering of suffering. Mental and physical suffering. And then the suffering of change. This is the truth of it. And that's just the suffering of change getting going through from birth to old age, right? And then on into death. That in and of itself is suffering. But change itself, how we hold on not wanting change, how quickly we get set in the way it is now. And then how disturbing it is when it's changed. You change, somebody changes where they put things in your house.
Who moved my cheese?
Yeah, like that. We get upset with small change. But change actually can be a blessing, yeah? Because if we're stuck in some kind of difficult situation, we can embrace change. And if we are always embracing change, we're always holding things like this. Not like this. It means we can enjoy as much as possible. In every moment, knowing that nothing will last. That's okay. We expect it. No? We expect things to break. We don't get all freaked out when the car doesn't start. Or do we? It is thinking about change. The meditation that we did last week, or maybe the week before, on how things change. How we think it is this way now, and this way I don't like. But governments change, whole nations change, civilizations come and go, and yet we solidify things as they are, and either like or don't like. It's something to contemplate. And all-pervasive suffering? All-pervasive suffering, Lama Zopa Rinpoche calls it all-pervasive compounded suffering. Because we have these five contaminated aggregates, you know, form, feeling, consciousness, compositional factors, and discrimination. But they're contaminated by karma and delusion. You know, it's the fact that we have these delusions, ignorance, the fact that we have ignorance, this misknowing, the fact that we have that belief that things exist in a solid, concrete way, that in and of itself is pervasive suffering and gives rise to jealousy, pride, doubt, grasping, desire, ignorant hatred. All because we believe that things have an inherent existence, exist in the way that we believe that they do. So that's the culprit, and that's the one that we have to uncover in our meditation. That's the one that we really have to see, how it is that we don't exist in the way that we think we do. Because that's the cause. That's the root cause of samsara. And if we can pull that out, we're free. I find it useful, these lists. These are the lists of the general sufferings of samsara. And to meditate on them is very useful. So birth, aging, sickness, and death. Losing your body time and time again, taking rebirth time and time again, falling from higher to lower places. And loneliness, you do it all alone. We do it all alone. We think we can share, but in fact, it really is our feelings, emotions, they really are our own. Even when we explain them and share them, our joys and our sorrows, fundamentally, underneath it, there is a loneliness because there isn't anyone else that can really understand. So there is that fundamental. It's interesting. But what got me was that Lord Buddha made a list of dissatisfaction and uncertainty. When we look at it, dissatisfaction is for sure suffering, right? And I was looking at uncertainty, how uncertainty is a suffering. But we live with uncertainty. We can't know what's coming. But we want to. Don't we make the best plans? But we're uncertain. Fundamentally, we think it'll all happen this way. We've made the plans and we've set it all in motion. But there's a fundamental undercurrent of uncertainty that exists. Pretty amazing, really. Not getting what you want, getting what you don't want, losing what you love, and this having these five aggregates that act as a magnet for suffering. If we think about these things, does it propel us to practice? And does it make you not want to experience that stuff? Usually we don't think about it. Usually we don't think so much about it. Right? Did you think about it, David?
That stuff?
Yeah.
All the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. What does it do for you?
Makes me practice.
That's excellent.
Question. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the values that we place onto things and how we attenuate things, you know, something is suddenly way more intense or doesn't mean as much. And then, so as a cause for looking for, trying to find an innate sense of balance, even just as because we practice Buddhism, but are not yet a Buddha. Some of that stuff still keeps coming up, and so it's actually a cause for continually questioning. So the stuff comes up, and it's always like, oh, what's that? You know, put that into perspective, and where did I, you know, what compartment am I putting that in, and where is it leading me? You know,
and then
even sometimes when that stuff will come up, and it was like, well, I'd be sitting right now, but this other thing is more important right now. Even though in my mind I said, well, I'm going to have this time to be on my cushion and do my sadhana and do this. And then it's like, oh, this other stuff. And it's like, really? It's like the continually shifting values that bright, shiny objects that are, it's our compulsion to distraction.
Totally.
Yeah, chasing those butterflies.
And there is, we go through, I think, some ebbs and flows in our practice. sometimes we feel very inspired and we practice well. And sometimes there's a general malaise. And I think that's not to beat ourselves up about. But it's to look at and to try to find creative ways to practice when you can't spend as much time as you would like on your cushion. So my view is to really start your day. This is your, everybody's going to wake up if you didn't die in your sleep. So Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, when you wake up, think, great, I didn't die in my sleep. Now I have a day to practice Dharma. So you make a determination as much as possible. This day, may I only benefit, bring benefit, and never harm. May I mind my three doors of body, speech, and mind. And then make that heartfelt wish. So when you do like that, you are taking refuge. When you do like that, you are taking refuge because you are accepting your profound potential, that you actually can make a difference in your life, in your future. And that way, by setting your intention for your day, your actions become more powerful. It's like you're now, you have the steering wheel and you're minding that. You're keeping on the road, keeping out of the ruts. And then at the end of the day, you look. How did you do? Because you're going to go to sleep. If before you actually pass out, you make a determination to look at your day and say, I rejoice in the good deeds that I did and I regret those things that I could have done better. May I tomorrow do a better job in that particular area? Then you can go to sleep with a happy heart because your whole day's been worthwhile. That much we can do. But to remember to do it, how do you remember to do it? What's the trick?
Habits.
Habits.
I have very bad habits.
How do you create that virtuous habit? It's going to be different for each one of you.
I was thinking consciousness of present moment is usually what does it to me. Shifting myself out of what's happening and where my mind is and bringing it totally centered. Mm-hmm. Consciousness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Happens to me all day.
This way you practice all day. This is how we practice all day, is that we bring ourselves back to the present moment, remembering our intention in the morning, remembering that it is our intention to wake up. It is our intention to become enlightened beings. The definition of an enlightened mind is a mind that is, let me see if I can remember it, a mind that is filled with the greatest, most far-reaching love, completely free of ignorant hatred, ignorant attachment, and ignorance itself. It is fused with wisdom and compassion. It is filled with boundless joy and no limitations to creating beneficial circumstances reflecting that joy. It is an unstoppable wellspring of happiness, peace, and contentment. And that, my friends, is our potential. So if we have that as our pole star, then why not do these two little practices, these two bookends that do like Lauren said. They pull you back, keep you on the road. And as much as possible throughout your day, you come back to present, remembering your intention to wake up. And that makes you mind your actions of body, speech, and mind when you have that intention. So think about, what do you need? You know, do you need something sitting beside your bed? Something, I don't know. I created that habit many, 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 many years ago, so it's like it's just a habit now. But I'm sure that I started out by having it by my bed. I'm sure I had a note by my bed, what to think, that I looked at it, and I did like that. So think about what you can do in your life to make that happen. And then if you can sit a little bit every day, begin to look at what it means to be present, then it's really excellent. So we have just a minute or two. Do you have a question? Anybody have a question? So we will. It's been great. I've really enjoyed. I love to come here and blah, blah, blah. yeah. So I hope it's been helpful in some small way. So let's dedicate the good energy. By merit of this virtue, may dedicate also to the long lives of all of our holy teachers. And anyone in your life who needs a little extra help now, dedicate this positive energy to their welfare, to those who have passed away. May they have fortunate rebirths. I wanted to say one more thing, one more thought I had. When you go to sleep at night, as a possibility, you can think about laying your head in the lap of the Buddha or in the lap of your teacher, and actually having the conversation with them about how your day was. It's a sweet thing to do, and just have them go to sleep in the lap of the Buddha. Just an idea. Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're
welcome. Elaine,
just on behalf of our group, just wanted to give you a little token of our affection. Wrestle a little candy away from the Easter Bunny.
Oh, how very kind. Thank you very much.
Come back.
Thank you. I hope so, too. Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, yeah. I think, I'll talk to Ami when she comes back. We'll conjure up something. But I think maybe next time we'll do a class on meditation. I think maybe that would be beneficial. We can share our tricks of the trade. Okay. Be safe. Be happy.